aiming for that, you're almost doomed to failure.
One of the complaints that I hear is that within the Chapel Hill Carborough City Schools, the emphasis that the teachers put on the students is on the advanced students, the college-bound students.
No, I don't think that's true. I think there is a tremendous effort made to the students who are not, and particularly to black and now Hispanic students. At least the black students speak the same, or speak almost the same language. Didn't quite the same. But I don't see that at all. I'm in and out of Mary Scroggs School because I volunteer there. And I'm pleased to see as the youngsters go in and out to playgrounds and that sort of thing, that they all seem to go out together as a group, and there's no dividing up anymore. There used to be. There isn't. I don't see that at all there now. And I've gotten acquainted with a few of the students. I was there one afternoon late, and the Chapel Hill schools have big after-school program, particularly for youngsters who have two working parents and these kids need something. And so it isn't just a babysitting thing. It's somewhat academic, too. And ran into some of the children who'd been out playing and were this. And one little girl who was, I think, a fifth grader. And I'd been out and been interviewed by the fifth graders for this. And she was telling these other youngsters who I was. And one little boy who was just about yay high, a little black boy, and he said, "And your name for our school?" And I said, "You got it." But there really has been, I think that all of the special things, a father or a resident out here who has children in Mary Scroggs School and has a, and his youngster, he has two grandchildren there. One apparently real sharp and learned to read easily, and the next one didn't. And he was saying, they moved here from, I don't know, from Atlanta or Savannah somewhere because the schools were bad. And he said, the teacher called and said, "I would like for your youngster to have extra help in reading." And I was worked with a reading specialist. And he'll have, if you're willing, he'll have 45 minutes a day of additional help because he decided he was dumb. Well, now he can read. They said it didn't take long. But that there are teachers who identify, so that there are all of these special types of teachers, special particularly in reading in the early grades. I have a daughter-in-law who's a reading specialist in the county schools. It's county schools. She's up at Grady Brown. And, you know, there's all of the, with the feeling in the early grades that if you can teach them to read, you can do most of the other things will come. And so there's a tremendous lot of work. And I don't think there's they've gotten rid of all of the self-contained classrooms, I think, for the academically particularly able. I don't think they have been. I think they've gone to the system of saying, you know, we need to be able to serve these youngsters within the framework of a regular school group. So that, they, you know, this is, rather than have them pulled out and marked out,
they're part of the regular classroom,
and the teacher is expected to plan the work in such a way that there's something for each level of youngsters that are there. And that's not easy.
Let's go back to the school board and the integration process again. And what I have heard in the community is that the original intent of the school board was to have the new Chapel Hill High School all white for a year.
No.
It was not.
No.
Okay. The other...
And I think we felt very strongly that the best way to try to bring the two schools together was for everybody to go at the same time. And it was, as usual, school was not finished. Everything didn't get moved. Some of Mr. Pierman's trophies didn't get out there. The trophy case in which they were to be put had not arrived. These were all sore points.
So the original plans were to bring Lincoln High School trophies to the new high school?
Oh, sure. You know, and have them in a, well, whoever, whatever trophies there were, all to be in a trophy case in the hallway at Chapel Hill High School. But we didn't, somehow it didn't come through clearly that that was the intent. And although it was clear to Mr. Pierman, and he made a point of saying, the ones that are not there are ones either that I won as an individual, and they're mine, or they're broken. When the cabinet finally came.
And what happened then?
Well, then they were put in the cabinet, and...
It's interesting that I hear another side of this, and that is that when they went to look for the trophies, they were in the trash can.
Well, no, I don't think that's true, but some of the broken ones may have been. I don't know. I don't know that story.
Was there a liaison, a group of black students, a group of white students, who met before the new Chapel Hills High School opened?
If there was, I don't remember.
Was there training for this integration process? I know you've already said that you were at a loss as to what to train or how to train.
Well, I think we tried with teachers. I don't think we tried particularly with students, because I don't think we knew what to do.
What kind of a background did you give the teachers? What kind of training did you give?
Well,
I
don't know, because this was an administrative thing as opposed to the school board. I think we tried to make it very clear that they were all students and they were all to be treated as individuals, and individuals of worth. And some teachers weren't very enthusiastic about this, and a few resigned, as a matter of fact, I seem to remember. Most of the teachers, I think, made a real effort.
Another rumor that I heard was that there were threats to the school board.
Oh, sure.
Can you expand on that?
Well, they were by telephone. And the chief of the police finally called my husband and said, you've got big boys at home. Your wife and daughter aren't to answer the telephone. I always want a male voice answering the telephone, so it's clear that there's one there.
So you had personal
threats? Oh, yeah.
Others on the school board had personal
threats?
Oh,
I'm sure they did. I don't see why I should be singled out. You know, it's one of those things. Roy Lindahl had the... He had a convertible, he had the top of his convertible slashed to a school board meeting, as I remember. I remember at one meeting they called and they said we were not to leave until there was a policeman to go home with each of us.
Did you feel frightened by it?
No, I figured the police would take care of me. That's what they were there for. And so we sort of went out as there were enough police cars that came to take care of us, and they followed me home and watched until I went in the house and turned on the light and said...
How long did this continue?
It wasn't, very long. But
what, a month, or two?
Something like that. Mm-hmm.
So this was not a big thing for you?
No, I know. It was just one of those things. I'd bought into it, and I had to expect things. And you never knew quite what it was that was going to trigger somebody off, that they would get agitated. There were lots of people who would call, and some of them didn't want to tell you who they were, and I said, you know, I don't engage in these things with anonymous phone calls. If you want to tell me who you are, I'll be glad to talk to you. Some of them tell me who they were, but then they would tell me the rumors that they were hearing. And I'd say, well, you know, from whom did you hear that? Well, it was, and I said, you know, if you heard it, you heard it from somebody. And we need to find out what these things are. They hadn't heard it from somebody. They made it up. This was a way of not having to admit to it.
It was their feelings.
It was their feelings, and you didn't rub it in too much, but you...
One of the things that stands out in looking at the makeup of the teaching staff at the new Chapel Hill High School is that there were only a few black teachers there. And there was only one black teacher teaching in a core curriculum course, the meat of the academic environment. And so the message that is left by this is not a really positive kind of message. And it brings up the question of who decided on the teachers? What happened to the African-American teachers?
Well, all I can tell you is that no African-American teacher was discontinued. They all were assigned. I remember there was a meeting down at Reverend Manley's church, and I've forgotten what it was, but anyhow, the school board was all there, and it was, you know, we had a full house. And I remember hearing teachers outside saying, well, they all saw that we got our contracts before they said that the two schools were going together, so we are protected. Mm-hmm. Now, who taught what, where, I don't know. I'm not aware of any.
Was it the principal who made the assignment, or was it the school board?
Well, the school board does not make classroom assignments.
So the principal may have.
Well, the principal may have, but, you know, if you have math teacher and one hasn't come from Lincoln, then you don't have a math teacher from Lincoln. The turnover in teachers in Chapel Hill has always been very high. It is not an easy place to teach.
Why is that?
Because the white parents are so difficult.
How?
Well, you know, if you're teaching about the French Revolution and your child comes home and says, my teacher said, and this professor says, well, that isn't how it is at all, and your teacher hasn't got good sense, and then the child goes back to school and says, you know, don't pay any attention to what she says, she doesn't know anything about it, my father says, well, you can do that in every single course in the whole school. And it is, so that teachers, if we didn't pay good supplements, we couldn't fill the vacancies here.
Did you feel that there was a difference in the training level of the teachers at Lincoln High School versus Chapel Hill High when it was still all white?
Well, the teachers who were at Lincoln had by and large gone to the three or four black teacher training institutions, Elizabeth City, Fayetteville State, Winston-Salem. Some had gone to what was then North Carolina College, now MCCU. And probably some of the best black teachers, women black teachers, came out of Bennett, which is a women's private black college for women in Greensboro. But I, at one point in time, was on the state committee that went around and inspected teacher training institutions and made recommendations about whether they should be accredited at the state level. And going to black colleges whose libraries didn't hold a candle to Chapel Hill High School. Some of these kids didn't have a chance. They went there because they had no other choice. This was where they could get in. These were the black colleges, and they went. But a lot of them were not very well prepared. And then when the state mandated that teachers would take this national teacher exam, we sent recruiters out to the black institutions to try to recruit black teachers. We never have to go out and recruit white candidates, but we went out to hunt for black ones. They'd go and they would find out that not a single graduate of this college this year had passed both parts of the NTE. So they're not hireable.
So I thought that the teachers who taught at Lincoln had to pass.
No, this was before the days that they had to pass.
And when was that?
Oh gosh, I don't know. It was much later than that.
Was it in the 50s? Or?
Oh no. I think the required NTE was probably in the late 60s, maybe 70s. I don't think it even existed in the 50s. So they had what they got at the college, and you got there. But this was more recent, and that's why it's been hard to recruit sometimes.
So there was no standardized teaching exam. That black and white teachers had to pass in the 50s.
You had to, you took on faith what you knew about the institution they went to, mm-hmm. and whether they turned out people who were competent.
Well, what about advanced degrees? Did any of the black teachers
have advanced degrees? Oh, yes. But there weren't many places to get advanced degrees at black institutions in this state. The favorite place to go was probably Columbia. Now, but it was a... And for what teachers made in those days, they couldn't much afford to take a year off to go to Columbia. Take advanced work.
What about continuing medical or continuing education? Did these the black teachers or white teachers go during the summer months to?
Oh yeah.
Was this something that was particularly recommended by?
I think so. And at some point it became, there was some requirement that if you had a bachelor's degree, you had every so many summers you had to go and take more courses, and you encouraged it when you could. Maybe suggested something that they thought would, that the principal thought would be helpful for a teacher to have more of. But this was in the days when teachers didn't make as much as a secretary on the college campuses. So that you couldn't put much pressure on somebody who was being so poorly paid. And the supplements were $100, $200 a year, not like they are now. And so teaching was one of the most poorly paid occupations. And this making it exceedingly difficult to get men teachers.
Who made the decision as to who would be hired as principal, who would be hired as head coaches of the sports teams at the new high school?
Well, I think the superintendent recommended and the school board probably always sort of accepted the recommendation of who would be the principal. And Miss Marshbanks became the principal of the high school, and Mr. McDougall became her assistant, and Mrs. I think was hard on Mr. Mack. It probably had to be that way for that first few years. I think we would have gotten a tremendous white backlash, since it was a white majority in the school. Bill Pierman coached the high school football team. I don't know whether he did that very first year or not, but he certainly was the head coach. We tried very hard, and it was very difficult. Superintendent would come back and said, I know you said you wanted us to find black guidance counselors, and we can't find any.
I think the black community was particularly distressed about C.A. McDougall, who was an icon in,
their community.
And Coach Pierman, who was likewise an icon.
He'd had a hard time. Neither school had its own playing fields. And the football games were all played at what was called Legion Field? I don't know. It was in Carrboro. And they sort of practiced out in the backyard of their schools, but that's where they played their games. And so there never could be. The schedules had to be coordinated so they didn't both need the fields at the same time. But the people who ran that were really hateful with the black teams and their coaches. And the school board would be pounding on the table with these people and saying, you cannot treat these people this way, and we wouldn't get much of anywhere. So that we were terribly pleased when we could have our very own football field at the new high school. And nobody had to put up with those people anymore.
So who ran those facilities?
Well, whatever organization this was in town that owned it.
I see. So,
we rented it. No, it wasn't. We had to pay rent to use it. And they called shots. And so if Lincoln had a very good band, and they would want to go out and practice to be able to play at halftime, and then the folks would tell them they couldn't come. And the superintendent would be down saying, you know, but you can't do this to these kids. So that was one of the things that we were so glad to get to where we had enough land that we could do this. And so glad to get out the white high school out of downtown Chapel Hill, which was a disaster.
It was a disaster?
Oh, yeah, for placement. Too much too close to fraternity houses.
Too liberal.
Well, no, you had to hire a custodian who went out every morning and took the used condoms down off the alley. This was the sort of, and so we wanted to get, you know, when we had a chance and Allen Brothers and O'Hara came along and said we'd like to buy that site, and the only way we could sell it, of course, is at public auction. It's the only way a school system can sell anything. And when they it took a second bidding, but anyhow, when they bid $1 million, boy, we jumped, because it was not a place that you wanted high school students to be.
They were influenced too much by...
Oh, far and away, you know.
The university.
They were by fraternities. You know, you saw girls going to, high school girls going to fraternity houses after school or during school. Well, now, this is not what they needed. This has been a problem in Chapel Hill always, is because of the university. The kids here grow up too fast.
Can you tell me about the superintendent of the school systems at the time?
How many would you like to know about? We turned them over.
Turned them over, huh?
Oh, boy, yes. Let's see, when I went on the board, it was Joe Johnston. And then...
Was he the one who was making the appointments at the new school, Joe Johnston?
No, I don't know. I don't know how they worked that out. And then...
You were the principal and...
Well, the principal would always come back to the board for a vote. Or somebody, but anyway, and then we had Howard Thompson, we had Willard Swears, we had Bill Cody, we had, and it was really very difficult because a new one would come in and probably have some pretty good ideas, and he would propose that we're going to do this and this and this and this. And of course, it takes you 1 year to gear one of those things up, and then you do it for a year, and then you ought to evaluate, and by that time they were gone and somebody else came and they had a new one, so that we had a lot of these things that got started and never really got anybody to evaluate whether they'd really worked or not.
Why did they turn over?
They got better jobs. Howard Thompson went back to be he had come from Wilkes County, and he went back to be the president of Wilkes Community College. Willard Swears went to teach at College East. I can't think of his name right now. Bill Cody went to the U.S. Office of Education in Washington. They all went to better jobs. Joe Johnston went with the Southern Association. We didn't pay very well. I think we paid in proportion to what we were paying teachers, but it wasn't very, nobody was going to get rich at it. And I guess it was until our first black superintendent, who was Jerry House, was here a number of years, and then she went to be the superintendent of the schools in Memphis. And I have my fingers crossed. Neil Peterson has been chosen as one of the four candidates to be the country's superintendent of the year. Even if he doesn't get it, if he's one of the top four. And the one of the top four is the superintendent in Houston, and he has just been named by George Bush to be on the cabinet in education. And I can't remember where the other two are from. But
so are you saying that the quality of the people you hired looked like it was pretty good?
Oh, yeah. They just didn't stay very long.
Except for Jerry House.
Well, yeah, and she was here maybe 4 years or so, and then, but...
Let me ask you another question about the school board and its involvement directly with teaching. Did the school board ever go into the classroom and observe teaching?
Not if we could help it. When a parent called, you had a standard speech you made, and you talked to the teacher. If they had, have you talked to the principal? Have you talked to the superintendent? And only then could they come to the board. The board did not need, and I still feel, does not need to be involved at that level.
Now, I don't mean as a corrective measure, but I mean just as someone observing
I think we were none of us pros. None of us. Helen Allen had been a teacher. And I don't think anybody else on the board had been. We were not pros as far as professional teachers were concerned. We were in and out of the schools, but not in that role.
Now, you had children going to school while you were on the school board.
Yes, I didn't run after my last ones were about to be graduated.
And they were there during this period of integration?
Oh, yeah.
What effect did it have on your children, the integration process?
Oh, I don't know that it had much. They said that if they came home and complained, it didn't do much good because their mothers said, you know, that's not a school board matter. But they were, they took a fair amount of grief from other kids because their mother was on the school board. But they bore up, I think.
What influence did the other, did the black students have on your children? And then I want to give you a related question after that.
I don't know that it, you know, had much of anything. You know, the black students were there, the white students were there. My kids were of the opinion that they all had a right to be there, and so.
Did they have black friends?
I don't think close friends, no.
And what about the black teachers? What influence did they have on your children?
Probably no more than the white teachers had.
Mm-hmm. Well, what about R.D. Smith? Who was
now he had a great influence on Max, who he had recruited Max as a bus driver. And Max came home and said he wanted to drive a school bus. And I said, oh, leave the school bus driving to kids who really need the money. And he said, Mr. Smith says that bus driving can't become a nigger job and he needs me. And I said, oh, in that case, go right ahead and drive.
Wow.
So we lived on the dead end of Rosemary Street. That bus came down. Nobody wanted it parked up at the top of the hill. It had to be backed down because there wasn't room to turn it around. He would get his brother to come out and help until he learned to back it down about 400 feet and park it in front of the house.
Did R.D. Smith have any other influence on your...
Oh, sure. Max took auto mechanics from him.
Mm-hmm.
And... he just thought Mr. Smith hung the moon. He really did. And he came to his father when he graduated from high school and said, would the family honor be ruined if I said I didn't want to go to college? And Ross said, I guess not. What did you have in mind? And he said, well, I want to be an auto mechanic. And Ross, who thought faster than I do, said, well, I guess I've got two things to say. You'll have to go to school to be a good one. There's no more room in the world for jack-like mechanics. If you can be an honest one at the same time, I think the world's yours. And their garage has never had a day that it wasn't full.
Are they here locally?
Oh, yeah, they're a better wrench down here. They specialize in Mercedes, Volvo, BMW. They started out as a general garage business, and he has a partner, and they keep about seven mechanics going. It's considered, you know, the people come bring their Mercedes from all over the East Coast. They come from Washington, they come from Florida. And then he buys cars. He goes to the auctions and buys. They're usually, demonstrators or lease cars or something. And people come in and say, I want a Mercedes and I'd like it in a pink car with purple upholstery and I want it to be about this year and I want it to pay about this much. And he writes all this down and he says, oh, look. And then he says, you don't find the pink car with the purple upholstery, but you call up and say, I found a car the year you want and I had to pay X, and you'll have to pay so much for it, and this is how many miles it has on it. And then they truck these back in, and they put them in the shop and go over them and be sure that everything is good, and then they sell them and guarantee them.
So one of your children had, R.D. Smith, had a profound effect.
Oh, yeah, tremendously, yes.
What about your other son?
Oh, the auto mechanics was not his thing. Mm-hmm. He probably, big influence was Bob Colton, who was the, and Steve went to Appalachian to be a teacher, and then he was, when he got out of college, he went into Peace Corps, and then he came back and he taught at in Kinston. Was a teacher, and then he was an assistant principal in a middle school, and then he was the principal of an elementary school, and then he, long after I was off the board, he came up here and was the principal at McDougal Elementary School, and now he's the assistant superintendent for support services in the school system. And Max taught auto mechanics at the high school for about 5 years, and North Carolina has one of the things I think is fairly bright of them. When they hire people to do that kind of teaching, skilled trades, they hire the skilled tradesmen. And then you have to go back and take classes on weekends and nights. Max took his through NC State. But he said he couldn't afford to be a teacher. But he had been a mechanic at Mercedes dealership out of here, was when there was one out on the Durham Road, and he was at the one in Wilmington. And so
one of the brilliant things that I thought the school board did was to hire Hilliard Caldwell.
Yes, Hilliard did a fine job.
Can you talk about that, why he was hired and what his role was and what he did?
His role was sort of to work with mostly with black families, and was his title homeschool coordinator, was something like that. Mm-hmm. And he sort of operated in the role of an assistant principal, and worked out in the community with parents, and did a good job. And another person that I think it much more recently is Teresa Williams, who's now on the school board. And when she had youngsters at McDougal Middle School, she worked on a thing of students and their parents, and they both had to sign on for extra things to do, and she did wonderful things with them. And she's been one of the, and she and Elizabeth Carter, Valerie Fouché, have all been very strong supporters of the AVID program at the high school.
What is that now?
Well, this is a program for students that I guess they're identified as people they think have promise but aren't making it. And this is one course, one class per day, but it's how to study, how to organize your things, where you need help, how to go, who to ask when you need it. And they were the AVID, when the AVID came to make their budget pitch last year, and I usually look at the school board meetings when they're on TV, they brought some students who had, were graduates of the AVID program, and they were uniformly tremendously enthusiastic about it, and all of them were going to good colleges. Then they said it had made the difference. And then they've got the Phoenix Academy, where they, this is to try to pull some of the kids up, which meets in two wooden buildings out at Lincoln.
When was the AVID program started?
Oh, it must have been started 4 or 5 years ago. I think they have it now in all of the junior or the middle schools as well. And you the school board has to put up its money to send people off to be trained and prepared to take this on. And it could only, I think they would like to expand this to maybe have more than one AVID class per year. It has been a very successful program, I think.
I've heard someone say that the first 3 or 4 years of integration in the school system, the black students performed better than they're performing now.
I don't know about that.
When you went to the school board, did you go there with your own program or your own?
Oh, you know, all of us damn Yankees come in and are sure we can solve all the problems. And you find out pretty promptly that you can't.
What were your goals?
I had a very strong feeling that there ought to be a more of the various elementary schools and the junior highs working together so that when a youngster finished, say, the sixth grade, that they were all sort of at the same point, so that they went on to the new school equally well prepared. Some things like that I felt fairly strongly about. And of course, I felt fairly strongly about the desegregation business. And of course, about the budget, which is always a problem, still is a problem.
What did you feel the biggest accomplishments were while you were on the school board, and any that you felt personally responsible for?
Oh, I don't know. I was the one who wrote up the proposal for the all sixth grade school. But I think the fact that we had, and we don't have integration. We have desegregation. We aren't integrated yet. I don't know if it will ever be, but we get closer, but it's a slow process. But I felt very strongly that we needed to do that.
What do you mean by that? We have
well, they're mixed in color, you know, but as far as being a cohesive student body at the high school, I don't think they are yet. There are still students who are not, don't feel really a part of it. White and black.
What about the elementary school?
I think, you know, I see what I think is progress there. And you hope it'll move up. And I said it back in the early days that I thought it would be sort of a spiral and it would go slowly and up. And I think it is, but it's taking longer than I hoped it would.
At the junior high school?
At any level.
Do you think it's there yet?
No.
So it's there in the elementary.
But I think the elementary schools are doing pretty well by it.
How do you come to that conclusion?
Just from watching the kids when I've been at the school. How they do things together, you know. They play on the same equipment. They do the same things together. There isn't anybody that stands off to one side. You know.
Let's skip ahead now to 1969 and the black protest or riot or uprising, whatever you want to call it. And I'd like to hear your take and the school board's take on what happened, why it happened, and what was done about it.
Well, it had always been a tradition, I guess, that the senior class elected the marshals for high school graduation. They hand out the programs, they let them down into the seats and whatnot. And a group of seniors who were a very thoughtful group had worked very hard to be sure that there were black students elected. And they were. and in about the proportion that there were black students to white students. But those were in the days when most black students felt that it wasn't fair unless they were equal. And they weren't equal. And they went to the principal and complained. And she looked at the list, and if you went down and you named two more marshals than had been elected, then they would be equal. And she did. And the white students who had worked very hard for this felt that they had were not being appreciated for the effort that they had put out, which had been tremendous. So they appealed it to the school board. And unfortunately, the then school board chairman, we were having a meeting that night and they came. Now that's always a mistake. When you have one like this, you need to let it cool. And
who was it who came to the school board?
The white students who had engineered this thing. And it was clear there wasn't any very good solution to it. And I think I probably made the motion that said I move that there not be any marshals. And the board agreed. And we said the parents could hand out programs. Well, this didn't make anybody happy, but it all made them about equally unhappy. And that's about the best we could do. But we had some flap over that, and we had some destruction. And it was... I don't know that it could have been prevented. The principal resigned at the end of that year.
Made marshbacks?
Yeah. And I think it was an error in judgment on her part.